Exodus 17, I'll begin reading in verse 8. You follow along, we'll go down to verse 13 just like that. Then came Amalek and fought with Israel in Rephidim. And Moses said to Joshua, choose us out men and go out, fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. So Joshua did as Moses had said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. It came to pass when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. Now, if you recall from verse 9, the rod of God is in his hand, so he's holding up his hand, but in his hand will be the rod. Verse 12, but Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat thereon. And Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands, the one on the one side and the other on the other side. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua discomfited Amalek and his people at the edge of the sword. Now, in this battle, God responded when the rod of God was held up in Moses' hand. And so he had to have help. We see that in a moment, holding up his hands. But when the rod of God was held up, then the Lord responded by giving them the victory over Amalek. Now, what's interesting is if you study in Moses and this rod of God, in other situations, the Lord... Now, you'd think, okay, every time the rod's held up, that's when God works. Well, that's not how it was. In this situation, the rod being held up. In other situations, the rod was cast down. They're totally opposite. So he could have said, God could have said to Moses, cast the rod down and I'll wipe out Amalek. But he didn't. He wanted the rod held up high. Let me explain what I mean. Go with me. Hold your place in Exodus 17. Just go back a few chapters. Exodus 4. Exodus 4. And go down to, let's look at verse 2 and 3. The Lord said unto him, what is that in thine hand? And he said, a rod, he being Moses. And he said, now watch this, cast it on the ground. And he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent, and Moses fled from before it. So you have the same idea. Moses, you had this rod. Here in Exodus 4, it's cast it down. In Exodus 17, it's hold it up. Now the key is this, that the power was not in the rod. The power was in the Lord. And the Lord blessed as Moses did what God told him to do with the rod. So it wasn't like a magical, it's not like, you know, if you grew up reading comic books and you might think, you know, this is like Thor's hammer or something. It's not a magical thing. The power is in the Lord. The reason the Lord blessed when he cast it down is because the Lord said, cast it down. So he did what the Lord said, the Lord blessed. When the Lord told him to hold it up, that's what, and he held it up, that's what the Lord blessed. So the rod was to be used as God directed. And therefore, as Moses obeyed God's direction, that showed his faith. His faith wasn't in the rod. His faith was in God. So when God said, cast it down, he said, okay, I cast it down like you said. I trust you. I believe you. And then the Lord responded. When the Lord said, hold it up, he held it up. Not because he believed somehow there was power in this rod that would kill the Amalekites, but that he believed that if I respond in faith like the Lord is telling me to, then the Lord would respond in blessing. And that's exactly what happened. So it did not matter. Now watch this. It did not matter if Moses understood why he was to cast it down or why he was holding it up. That's not the key. It wasn't like, okay, well, why do I got to cast it down here? Why do I got to hold it up here? Explain this all. That's not the point of it. It only mattered if Moses had enough faith to trust what the Lord said and do what the Lord said. That's all that mattered. He didn't have to understand, well, why cast it down here? Why hold it up here? Why not reverse it? How come it can't always be down? How come it can't always be up? Well, it doesn't matter. All that matters is what does the Lord say? Are you going to trust what He says and show that faith in acting upon what the Lord tells us to do? So that brings us to this. I'm sure you're probably wondering where are we going with this, but just bear with me, okay? It's a fun journey. Faith is not based, now watch this, faith is not based on understanding God. A lot of times we struggle and we say, well, I don't know. I just don't understand God. How can I have faith? Because faith and understanding is not the same thing. If you understood everything about God, okay, if this is your criteria, I'm not going to do what God says until I understand fully what He wants, then you'll never do what God says. Because you're never going to understand it fully. Now, you may understand it to the point where you're comfortable, but you're never going to understand it fully. That's not possible. You're not going to know all that God knows and see it and understand all the way God sees and understands it. So faith is not based on understanding God, but rather it's based on believing God. And sometimes believing God when the understanding is not there. When you say, Lord, this makes no sense. I don't see why you'd want this, but this is what you said. And I believe you will keep your word. And I'm going to do what you said because I believe you. I don't understand, but I believe. And it's that faith is how the Lord responds. Let me show you a couple of verses, maybe to encourage you along this line. Deuteronomy says this. It says, the secret things belong unto the Lord our God. But those things which are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. So the Bible tells us there are certain things that you're not, he calls them secret things. There's some things you're just not going to know. But the things you do know is what he expects you to act upon. When he says, okay, here's what I want you to do, then we say, okay, Lord, I don't understand all the details, but I'm going to trust you in this. Here's another verse in the New Testament. Actually, we could give you probably a half dozen, but we'll just give you one more. Romans 11 says this, oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. Then it says this, for who hath known the mind of the Lord? Or who hath been his counselor? In other words, no one can say, well, you know, I do all these things because I understand fully what God wants. No, you maybe understand some of it, but there's faith, there's trust, and that's what the Lord blesses. Now, with that foundation, we're going to go a particular direction in this idea of faith. When it comes to how God chooses to work, okay, so how he chooses to bring about what he's trying to bring about. So when it comes to how God chooses to work, the important thing isn't whether we agree with it or understand it or approve of it. That's not the important thing. When we're thinking about how the Lord works and what we're and our response to it, it's not, do I agree with it? Do I understand it? Do I approve of it? Really, it's this. What does God say and how we're going to respond? That's the basis of it. So let me give you this statement. God is not looking for our approval, but our faithful obedience. You know, God doesn't do polls in heaven. He doesn't go to some angel named Gallup or Rasmussen and says, hey, how am I doing down on earth? What's my polls like? Well, God, you know, among America right now, you're not doing too good in this area. You might want to work on it. That's not the way the Lord works. The Lord works sovereignly, providentially, omnipotently, omnisciently. And he works in ways that we're never always going to understand. There's 8 billion people in the world. And he's working in every single life. Now try to figure that out. Try to figure out someone who knows every second of and every second he knows every thought of every person on this earth. All at the same time. It's hard for us to figure out what we even think. Well, I think this. I'm not sure if I think that. Let me think about that. But yet he knows every thought of every person. So we're not going to understand all that God is doing and understand all that God has going on, but we do need to say, well, this is what the Bible says, and I trust him. I believe him. If you sit here this morning and you're a child of God, then you're trusting him for your eternity, are you not? Amen. You're trusting him to hold you safe for billions upon billions upon the billions of years. Yet we struggle in a very short term on earth. You know, if I can trust God for my eternity, can I trust him for maybe a few decades down here? And so I need to have faith. I need to trust what he's saying. So let me back up so we can make sure we go understand the road we're going down. So when it comes to how God chooses to work, the important thing isn't whether we agree with it, understand it, or approve of it. The important thing is, what does he say and how we're going to respond? Are we going to have faithful obedience? Now, one way, this brings us to where we're going this morning. One way God chooses to work or has planned to work or does work, one way God works is through human leadership. Now, many may not like or agree that that's how the Lord works, but that is, biblically speaking, that's how the Lord works. He works through human leadership. Now, we may not always like who's in that place of leadership, but the Lord works through human leadership. We can't simply have anarchy and, well, I'm just going to do what I want. That does not produce a blessed life. Now, this dynamic of human leadership requires faithful followers. Leaders, by definition, need followers. Now, here's an old statement. It's been quoted by different people and kind of changed around a little bit. But basically, it says this. If you're a leader, and here you are, I'm the leader, and and then you turn around and no one following you, you're not a leader. You're just out going for a walk there. So the idea of being a leader is that people are following you. If you're a leader, then you're leading someone. And so by definition, a leader needs followers, and that's not why we ought to follow, just because they need someone to follow. But that's the idea. If God chooses human leadership, then by virtue of that choice of human leadership, He's choosing human followers as well. Because a leader, by definition, needs followers. So we're going to look at this account here in Exodus 17 and try to look at this dynamic of this leader-follower organization that the Lord has, how the Lord uses it, and some things we can apply from our lives. Now, the reason I started the way I did is I can tell you this, that because of our sin nature, we have a little bit of a rebel in all of us. We don't want to follow. Wet paint, do not touch. You know exactly what people are going to do. It's like they can't help it. It's like a moth to the light. They're just like, I got to touch it. Okay? Or if you see a sign, let's say you're taking a nature hike and there's a sign, don't cross this path closed. And people are like, well, I wonder why this path is closed. Let's go find out. And it's just like there's a bit of a rebel, and sometimes more than a bit, in each of us. And so we need to understand that the Lord works through human leadership. There's the idea of leadership and fellowship that's taught in the Bible. So I'm going to give you four lessons this morning so we can kind of maybe understand this dynamic a little bit better from a biblical perspective. So here's the first one. Number one is this. Well, let's go to our verse. Look at chapter 17. Look at verse 11. And it came to pass, when Moses held up his hand, that Israel prevailed. And when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. Now, who was the one holding up the hand? Now, I don't mean people who helped him. I mean, but who was the one person whose hands need to go up? Moses. Now, what if Moses kept his hands down and Aaron and Hur lifted up their hands? Is it the same thing? What if Joshua lifted up his hands? That probably wouldn't be good. They may think he's surrendering. So everything was based on Moses' hands being lifted up. So let me ask you, why? Why couldn't they rotate? Why couldn't they have, okay, we'll have 100 people, each person does it for a few minutes, no one gets too tired. I mean, we could have reasoned out different ways. But that's not how God chose. God chose a particular person to keep his hands up as a symbol toward the Lord. And we're not getting all to the symbolism and typology of it. But nonetheless, this is what God chose. This is what God wanted. No one else could do it. So here's our first lesson we learned. Number one is this. God has chosen to use people to lead other people. God has chosen to do that. Now, we may not like it, but that is how God works. He chooses people to lead other people. This is what the Lord expects, wants, plans, ordains. So leadership and authority is a part of God's ordained way to establish an orderly society. Without leadership and authority, imagine what the world would be like. Well, you don't have to, because there's places already you can see that. If you think about the Middle East, when we invaded Iraq and wiped out their leadership, and you can have your own idea about it, but definitely in hindsight, it wasn't a good idea to wipe out the entire leadership of the country, because what happened? Complete anarchy. Everyone just started no one can tell us what to do, and they're robbing, and they're doing all kinds of things. And so there's an idea of leadership and authority, and that's how God has planned as far as a society should be run. There's got to be people in charge, and those who are not in charge need to listen to the people in charge so that there's some order, some parameters by the way we live. Now watch this statement. Those not following or accepting human leadership, and there's people that way. Well, I'm no follow any man. I just do what I want. And there's people that think that somehow that's a big plus for them, but it's not. Those not following or accepting human leadership, now watch this, will find out they're not following God's leadership either. If God's going to lead you, He's going to lead you using people. People say, well, I just want to follow the Lord. Then you better figure out who the Lord has as your leader to help you do that. Because the Lord works through human leadership. Whether you're thinking in a family unit, societal unit, it can even be a job, church, whatever the unit is, God uses human leadership. He doesn't just throw a bunch of people in a room and just says, fight it out, figure it out, and hopefully the best person wins. The Lord sets up human leadership. Think about this verse, Romans 13. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. The word power means authority. For there is no power, no authority, but of God. The powers, the authorities that be, are ordained of God. In other words, not necessarily the people who's in authority, but the idea of offices and positions of authority is set up by the Lord. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the authority, resisteth the ordinance of God. In other words, you're going against how the Lord has set things up. And they that resist, resisting this ordained setup the Lord has, shall see to themselves damnation or judgment. So the Bible is telling us, when I fight against human leadership, the assumption is that the human leadership is doing right. Okay, because you sit there, what if the human leadership is telling me to go out and kill people? I mean, we come up to extreme things. Okay, we're assuming at this point the leadership is trying to do right. Okay, not perfect, no leader is, but they're trying to do right. And in that case, then I need to make sure I understand God has set up human leadership, and I need to submit myself to that, because this is how the Lord works. He doesn't expect 100 people or 1,000 people or 1,000,000 people all do what they want to do, and everyone trying to figure it out, and then you have chaos and rebellion and everything else. Now, with that thought in mind, because I told you the assumption is they're doing right. So let me give you a couple of statements. This does not mean that human leadership is perfect or cannot be questioned. People say, you're telling me the authorities are always right. And I'm telling you the authority is not always right. I'll be first to admit the authority is not always right. They're not perfect. They don't get it all right every time. Nor does it mean they can't be questioned. Okay, we're not talking about like lemmings, just fall in line, mindless, like robots, and just, don't even question what's happening as we march off the cliff together. Okay, we're not talking about that. Okay, there is a place for questioning. In fact, we used to say this, we haven't said it in a while. It's a good time to say it again, I guess. We used to say this in our church. We'd say, everyone can have a say. No one gets their way. See the difference? There's a difference between having a say, having input, and sitting there saying, well, and if you don't do it my way, then I'm not going to be a part of it. Well, let me tell you, then you're probably not going to be a part of it. Because that's rebellion. That's demanding everyone else submit to you. And that's not the way the Lord works. And so there's nothing wrong with having a say, nothing wrong with giving your opinion, nothing wrong with saying, well, can we consider it this way? But eventually, when a decision is made, which we'll talk about in a second, people need to work together to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish. And again, it's not talking about just the church. That's the same true in the family. Same thing is true at work. Same thing is true in our society in America. This is the way the Lord works. So it does not mean, let me give you a statement. It does mean a spirit of rebellion or unwillingness to follow is contrary to what God wants. So it doesn't mean that leadership is always right, always perfect. Doesn't mean you can't question, can't have input, can't say, well, wait a minute, have you considered this? What it does mean is, when I have a spirit of rebellion, I'm never willing to follow. That is contrary to what God wants. So let me give you a little sub-points here. How to deal with conflicts with your leader. Now, I may be talking to a group of people who've never had a conflict ever with any leader in their life. Maybe you're sitting here saying, Pastor, I have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, my whole life has been just, I've had great leaders, and there's been great submission to authority. But there may be someone you might know that might need this. So let me give you some idea about how to deal with conflicts with your leader, because most likely it comes up in life. I'll give you just four quick thoughts about this. Okay, number one, don't assume motive or accept the assumption of others. Sometimes we don't assume the motive, but someone else does, and they tell us, well, you know why he did this. You know why the boss won't give you overtime. Because the boss doesn't like you. And you're like, well, why doesn't that boss like me? Who said the boss doesn't like you? Did the boss tell you that? No, well, he did. Well, how do you know that that's true? We assume things, or we accept the assumption of someone else. Or even, again, whatever social unit you're referring to. Here's a good rule of thumb. You don't know why the leader did what he did unless the leader told you that. If the leader didn't tell you that, then you really, I know why. Really? So you're now a mind reader. No, but I know why. Okay, so you're God and you can see into the heart? No, but I know why. Nah, you don't. So don't assume motive or accept the assumption of others. Now, what about when you're dealing with a leader? Now, again, maybe this hasn't been your testimony, your experience. This is mine. I've had leaders where I've been like, I don't know about this. I don't want to walk off the cliff with everyone else. I think I'm going to speak up. And there is a time to speak up. There's a time to say, well, wait a minute. I don't really think this is going to get us all killed. Maybe we ought to rethink what we're doing. So there is a place and time for that. But here's the key. That when you're going to speak up, here's a key. Have a spirit of humility in your words. Most leaders don't get mad at the follower unless the follower comes with a big chip. Remember, was it Robert Conrad? The guy on Bob Black Sheep. Was that? Remember, he used that old commercial, put the battery on his shoulder. Go ahead, I dare you to knock it off. That kind of a, attitude. Now, if you come to your boss that way, well, okay, you idiot, don't you know what you're doing? You're messing everything up. Most likely, if that's how you approach your boss, it's not going to turn out well. Your boss is going to say, I'm so stupid, I don't know why I hired you. Let me fix that mistake. You're no longer hired here. So you got to come with a spirit of humility. It doesn't mean you kiss up. It doesn't mean you lie, or you just simply come. You come with a, say, well, I don't know everything that's happening, but I have some concerns, and I'd like to talk to you about it, and at least voice these things, and maybe you could help alleviate some of my concerns. There's a verse in the Bible, Proverbs, says this: He that loveth pureness of heart, now watch this, for the grace of his lips, the king shall be his friend. For the grace of his lips. So that spirit of humility in our words helps a whole lot when you're dealing with issues with a leader. I'll give you a third thought about this. Be willing to give the leader the benefit of the doubt. Now, all of us, and probably in some situation, are a leader. Whether you're talking about your family, maybe in some work situation. And you know this to be true. There are things that you know about what's going into this decision-making that you can't tell everyone about. Because either they're personal or they're confidential. Maybe there's something that, you work for someone and they're doing something in a company, changing gears about this or that. And so decisions are being made, but they don't want everyone else to know yet because of whatever reason. And employees are questioning it, like, why are we doing this? And you can't say, well, you know what? I can't tell you everything. Here's all I can tell you. And this is what we need to do. That's giving the leader the benefit of the doubt. Sometimes you can't know all that's going on. They can't tell you everything that's happening. Sometimes you just got to trust. And hopefully, if you have a good leader, that they're not misleading you. So be willing to give the leader the benefit of the doubt. And then here's a fourth, maybe, way to help you in dealing with conflicts, and that would be this. Don't let little controversies blind you to the bigger purposes. In any situation, you're going to have issues with whoever's in charge. I've never had a boss that I've agreed with 100%. Now, you say, well, that's kind of cocky. Let me give you another statement. I've never agreed with myself 100%. There's times I've done things, and later I'm like, that was stupid. Why did I do? I should have done it that way instead. Man, I'm going to yell at myself for a few moments. That's just, why did I do it that way? And so the idea that we have to agree with someone 100%, or that we have to be, believing in what, that's not what we're talking about. We're simply saying that, and again, we'll cover this kind of another part of this in a moment. But if there's this little small stuff, we say, whatever. Okay? There's a bigger thing happening. At work, maybe the bigger thing is this: the company's profit. When I was working at Federal Express, here's what's interesting. Federal Express is like a $1 billion company. And here's these guys working there, and someone said this. They said, well, I can't believe how stupid this company is. Don't know what they're doing. And I'm thinking, you make this much money, they're making this much money. I think I believe them. They know what they're doing more than you. You can't even run your route and pick up all the packages without missing stops. They're running a multi-billion-dollar company. I think they probably know more about what's happening. So don't let little controversies blind you to the bigger purpose. The bigger purpose is they're giving me my paycheck. The little controversy might be going on is that, this truck has a big scratch down the side and they won't fix it and it's all irritating me. So don't let little controversies blind you to the bigger purposes. There's always be disagreements, but you just got sometimes you just think, well, it's not worth fussing about. So number one, God has chosen to use people to lead other people. That's just the fact of life. There's going to be human leadership, and the Lord expects us to submit ourselves to when we're the follower and to follow that human leadership. That brings us to number two. Leaders need faithful followers. Now, why would I say that? Go back to chapter 17, look at verse 12. So Moses is the man chosen. But watch this. Moses' hands were heavy. So he's holding it up, and you know, if you held your hand up above your head for a while, what's going to happen? Oh, and then you're standing up, and you're like, oh, and his hands would fall down, and the Amalekites would start winning the victory, and he's like, finally, Aaron and Hur said, well, we've got to help Moses. He's struggling here. So they found a stone for him to sit in, and he had to hold his hands up. So they let him sit down. One guy held this arm up, one guy just held this arm up, and they assisted him in what was happening. And that's what we see in verse 12. Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and put it under him, and said he sat there, and Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands at one on the one side, and the other on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So no matter how great a leader may appear, ultimately his success is dependent on faithful followers. Let me tell you, if you're a leader, that's something you need to understand. Sometimes as a leader, we're like, look at me, I'm doing great things. All right, then do it all yourself and see how great it is. Hey, wait a minute, I need help. Exactly, you need faithful followers. This whatever social unit. We can talk about FedEx and say, well, Fred Smith, what a great CEO he is. Okay, let Fred Smith run every route in Chicago and pick up every package or deliver it. He can't do it all himself. So he needs some workers, he hires people, and he expects them to do their job faithfully. So leaders need faithful followers. The greater the success that's happening, the greater the need there is for faithful followers to be a part of it. Now, we talked about having your say, input, and all that. So let me give you a little bit of more about that. Once the decision-making process is over, it is time to hold up and support the hands of leadership. Now, maybe this has not been your experience, but I've experienced this. There's some people who want to talk it to death. Never make a decision. I've been in church meetings this way. No, not here, because this is the perfect church. I'm talking about other churches that aren't as good as us. I've been in meetings, especially like a deacon's meeting, and here's something we need to discuss. And for an hour, they're talking about it. And another hour, they're talking about it. And they're saying the same thing again and again. And you almost want... Now, I'm not the pastor, so I can't really... I'm just part of this meeting. But you almost want to stand and say, okay, enough! Let's vote! Let's decide! Let's do something! We're talking this thing to death! And so sometimes the only thing people want to just keep... Well, what about this? Well, what about this? Okay, we've considered everything to consider. Let's make a decision. Let's pull together and let's try to accomplish something. And so once the decision-making process is over, it is time to hold up and support the hands of leadership. Faithful followers should be free to have their say. Okay? We're not saying just shut up and do what the boss says. That's not what we're saying. But we're saying once you've had your say, okay, once you've had your input, once you've questioned, once you've said, what about this? And have we considered this? And let's think about it this way. Once all the talking is over, okay, the decision is made, then we need to support leadership. Now watch this as if it was your way. Let me tell you, this is a little different than a lot of people. Well, I'm going to have my input, but if it doesn't go my way, then I'll just let them do it themselves. Really? That's not a faithful follower. Faithful follower says, I'm a part of this group. I'm going to put as much input as I can, but if I stay a part of this group and a decision is made, I'm going to work to make this decision successful as if it was my idea. That's how you work together as a group. That's how you support the leadership that God has given you. And so, we work it that way to try to be successful in what the Lord would have us to do. We want to be part of the solution. We don't want to be part of the problem. Now, I'll give you two more thoughts about this. Go back with me to chapter 17, look at verse 10. So Joshua did as Moses had said to him. Now, let me just back up to verse 9. I find that kind of funny sometimes when I read verses in the Bible. Verse 9, and Moses said to Joshua, choose us out men. But Moses didn't go down to fight. Joshua went down to fight. He could say, what do you mean us? I'm going down there. You're staying up on there on the rock, sitting. But nonetheless, that's what Joshua did. So Joshua did as Moses had said to him and fought with Amalek And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. Now look at verse 12. But Moses' hands were heavy, and they took a stone and put it under him. And he sat there, and Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands. And we just talked about that a moment ago. So that brings us to a third thought. So we're talking about this dynamic of leadership and leader and follower in the human way. Now obviously the Lord's a perfect leader, but the Lord has chosen human leaders, and they're not perfect. So we talked about this idea that God chooses to put people in positions of leadership. And then we talked about this idea that leaders need faithful followers. Therefore, if we're going to be a follower, we need to be faithful what God is to the leader that God has called us to follow. And then number three, the third thought would be this. Not every follower has the same job. You have, in this story, you have four people. You have one leader, Moses, and you have three followers, Joshua, Aaron, and Hur. Now, Joshua said, now, wait a minute. How come you get to go on the hill with Moses and I get stuck down here with these people fighting? Well, I go up there and you guys come down here. But that's not, you can't always fuss like that. You have to say, well, what's my role here? What's my responsibility? It may not be what I want it to be, but what is it that I'm supposed to be doing? So our commitment, I'm going slightly a different way here. Our commitment shouldn't be tied just to a title or office. By that I mean this. We should be faithful to our responsibility, that is true, but our commitment should be to God. Joshua, who are you committed to? I'm committed to God. Aaron, who are you committed to? I'm committed to God. Hur, who are you committed to? I'm committed to God. Okay, that's true. You all have the same commitment. But what is your responsibility? Joshua, my responsibility is to go down there to fight. Aaron, what's your responsibility? Stand over here and hold up his hand. Hur, what's your responsibility? Stand over here and hold up the other hand. Okay, we have different responsibilities, but the same commitment. So the commitment isn't to just a title office I have. My commitment is to the Lord, and I just fulfill the responsibility I have in that situation. Now watch this. This is true both in a secular job situation or in a church ministry situation. Our commitment ultimately, when you go to work, now, Doug works for the federal government. He works at DFAST. Now, his commitment is to the Lord. His responsibility there is to DFAST. When you go to DFAST, you're not really working for the government. You're really working for the Lord. I'm here. The Lord has arranged this. The Lord has provided this. So his what he does at work is more important that he's a testimony for the Lord than whether or not the government checks him off and says, great, good job. Our commitment ultimately is to the Lord. Now, we mentioned FedEx. At FedEx, my commitment is to Jesus. But my responsibility was to get in this truck, drive down the road, run over some bike messengers without telling anyone, go real fast around the corner so you can find me, pick up these packages, get back in time to put it on the belt so it loads into the container and gets into the truck and goes to the plane and goes to Memphis, sorts, and goes wherever it's going. That's my responsibility, but my commitment there is to the Lord, which is why I really didn't run over bike messengers. Now watch this verse. This verse, at a young age, kind of revolutionized some of my thinking. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh. That would be your job. That would include your job. Not with eye service as men pleasers. Oh, here's the boss. Let's get busy. Boss is gone. Okay, let's goof around. No, you're not just trying to make bosses happy. But in singleness of heart, fearing God, that's the commitment. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily, in other words, from the heart, as to the Lord, not in the men. Knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. So whatever responsibility you have, your ultimate commitment is to God. Not to the boss, not to the job, not to the title you have, not to the office you hold. Your ultimate commitment is to God. That means, as followers, we all have different jobs, we all have different responsibilities, but we all have the same commitment. So we see the value in the job, without being jealous of the job of others, because I have the same commitment as the other person. I may be down here fighting, they may be on the hill with Moses, but we're saying the same commitment. The Lord just has chosen different places for us to fulfill that commitment, different responsibilities. And one of the reasons is this, think about this statement, God uses opportunities, these different responsibilities, to develop different people in different ways. Why wasn't Aaron down there fighting? Why didn't God let Joshua hold up his hand? Well, ultimately, if you read the Bible, you know this. Joshua is going to be the general throughout the whole campaign. into the promised land as they crossed Jordan going to the promised land. Aaron and Hur is not. So who needed the experience about being the leader? Joshua did. So God uses Joshua different than Aaron and Hur. But God has a purpose and a plan. God works different ways in different lives of accomplishing what He's trying to accomplish in each of our lives. So we have to do what God has for us to do without worrying what everyone else is doing, what He has others doing. Sometimes we're like, well, you know, all this sounds good, but how come I'm doing this and this is a hard job and they have an easy job? Well, I don't know all how the Lord works, but we have to let the Lord work in our life and accomplish what He's trying to accomplish. Even the early apostles had the problem with this. This is, Peter says this about the apostle John. Peter seeing him being John, the other apostle, said to Jesus, Lord, and what shall this man do? Because he had just told Peter, feed my sheep. Peter, serve me. Peter, do this. And Peter's like, okay, but what about him? What's he going to do? Now look at his response, verse 22. Jesus said to him, if I will that he tarry till I come, what is that to thee? Follow thou me. And that's also what he told Peter. He alluded to Peter's death, his martyrdom. And he says about John, he says, what if John doesn't have to die? What if you have to die for Christ and John doesn't? What does that mean? Peter, you just do what you're supposed to do. You commit yourself to me, he commits himself to me, and I have different responsibilities just as the Lord sees fit. So not every follower has the same job. Then there's a fourth dynamic we see here in this account. Go back with me to chapter 17, look at verse 13. And Joshua, now watch this, discomfited. That means he whooped them. Okay, discomfited Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. They had the victory. Now how did this happen? Because you had one leader, three followers, and each of them doing what they're supposed to be doing. And the Lord works that together to accomplish the Lord's will in this. So number four is this. Followers and leaders working together accomplishes God's will. So you have four people working together, fulfilling the individual responsibilities, allowing God to give His people a great victory. A failure in any one of them would have been a failure for all of them. Let me say it again. Think about it carefully. A failure in any one of them would have been a failure for all of them. What if Moses said, that's it, I'm not holding my hands. Battle's over. What if Aaron Hur said, who do you think I am standing here holding your hand? Go get someone else. I'm not your slave. His hands would fall down. They'd have lost. What if Joshua said, well, you guys are sitting up on a hill doing nothing. We're down here doing all the hard work. Forget this. And walked away. They would have lost. Every person needed to do their responsibility working together. That's the great reason for this dynamic. Followers and leaders working together is how God's will is accomplished. So this is the attitude that should dominate an organization. My responsibility is as important as anyone else's and must be done with faithfulness and excellence. My responsibility is to straighten a chair, then I need to do it the best I can and do it faithfully. My responsibility is to teach a Sunday school class, I need to do the best I can and do it faithfully. If my job is to cut the grass, I need to do it faithfully with excellence. Whatever my responsibility is, because working together, each one doing what they're supposed to do, is what allows the success of the whole. So the more this attitude dominates the organization, the more success the organization will have. If you get in an organization, if you get hired on somewhere and you realize real fast everyone is doing their own thing, I've been there before, where the boss says, do X, and he walks away, and no one is doing X. You're thinking, didn't you hear the guy? I don't care what he says. I've done it this way. I'm always going to do it this way. You realize this? We're not going to do well here. You got 10 people doing 10 different things. No one listens to the boss. We're not going to do well here. So followers and leaders working together is what accomplishes God's will for that organization. Now I'm going to give you, because we're to the end of our time here. God is chosen by His Godness, by His sovereignty, by His omnipotence and His omniscience, God has chosen to ordain human leadership. He could have done it differently, I guess. I mean, He could have sent down an angel over every group and made the angel the leader, but He didn't do it that way. God has chosen to ordain human leadership as a means to accomplish His will in this world. Now, truthfully and sadly, many human leaders have failed. And in so doing, have disappointed their followers. My guess is, and during the course of this lesson, these 30 minutes, you probably said, yeah, but well, I had a leader, and I know what he did, and boy, and then you did all that in your head. So, unfortunately, that is true. There have been many human leaders who have failed and disappointed their followers. But can I tell you the flip side? There have also been many, many leaders who have been faithful and worthy of the fellowship. Sometimes the only thing we focus on is that one who messed up. And maybe it really hurt you. Can I tell you? Not everyone, not every boss is an idiot. Okay? Not every pastor has failed. Not every parent is a doofus. Okay? There are ones that are worthy of our following, worthy of our respect. And I feel bad for those who have put up with the bad ones, but we can't say every boss is worthless because this boss is worthless. That makes no sense. So, ultimately, here's what we see. Our confidence isn't in the human leader. That's ultimately true. But our confidence is in God who has set up leadership and blesses our faithfulness and responsibilities we have. I trust the Lord. I don't always trust the leader, but I trust the Lord, and therefore I follow the leader because I trust the Lord. Now, so that you don't misunderstand me, human leadership should be held accountable for their errors. I believe that. They're an idiot. They need to be found out. Okay, I'm not talking about being perfect, but I mean, if they're just purposely doing bad stuff, then yeah, they should be held accountable. But here's also the flip side I'm also trying to get across to you. But be careful not to allow the error of one leader keep you from following any leader. Sometimes we just get so negative that we'll never follow anyone, and then we lose a lot of opportunities for blessing.